for this vital project was achieved during my presidency in 2016, progress has stalled. We'll reassess the work completed and take decisive action to bring this all-important project back on track. We will develop the Osu Castle, the former seat of government, and the area around it as a tourist attraction. It will have a pedestrian precinct with arts and craft markets, jewelry and gold markets. This approximate 22-acre land will become a destination for tourism. Mr. Speaker, our road network is the cornerstone of our nation's infrastructure, facilitating over 90% of the transportation of goods and services across this country. This vital network is critical in supporting agricultural growth by linking farmers to markets, lowering transportation costs, and ensuring quicker access to essential supplies and services. The resulting interconnected benefits foster a vibrant economy and enhance the livelihood of countless of our citizens. Mr. Speaker, while the previous government has made lofty claims about achieving unprecedented milestones in the road sector, available evidence does not support its assertion that it constructed over 13,000 kilometers of new roads. Instead, it has perpetuated a narrative that presents road maintenance and rehabilitation efforts as new construction projects, misleading the public about what has been achieved. The proportion of poor roads has increased, especially in urban centers, where the number of roads in disrepair surged from 46% in 2015 to almost 60% by 2021. Therefore, Mr. Speaker, our road sector is in crisis, mainly due to years of mismanagement. As many as 85% of awarded contracts in the road sector have stalled, and the contractors have stopped work due to non-payment, and most of them have parked their equipment off-site. Mr. Speaker, as of December 2024, unpaid bills owed to contractors in the sector exceeded 20 billion Ghana cedis for work that had been carried out between 2018 and 2024. For instance, the Ghana Road Fund obtained a loan of 600 million Ghana cedis in March 2018 to refinance outstanding debts and borrowed an additional 1.2 billion Ghana cedis from a syndication of banks in November 2019. Alarmingly, upon assuming office, the Ghana Road Fund still had outstanding payments, including some as low as 2,000 Ghana cedis, dating back to 2018. Current commitments for road projects that are unpaid currently stand at an astonishing 105 billion Ghana cedis. Despite these considerable challenges, this government remains steadfast and its commitment to prioritize vital infrastructure projects that address the pressing backlog of poor roads. Our strategy will be anchored in executing our flagship initiative under the Big Push program. The Big Push will see major rehabilitation of many key roads in the feeder roads, urban roads, and highway sectors. We'll also undertake the following key initiatives to revitalize the road sector. We'll reintroduce tolls, road tolls, using modern technology. We'll rationalize the road sector portfolio to focus on high-impact initiatives. Mr. Speaker, we will uncap the road fund in order that it can accumulate more money to pay for road maintenance. Mr. Speaker, we'll minimize sole source procurement to encourage competition, competitive bidding, and enhance public transparency in the procurement processes. Mr. Speaker, the drip equipment, which was acquired at the last moment as a knee-jerk reaction for electioneering purposes, for electioneering purposes, will be reorganized into regional mobile maintenance units to provide emergency road works in the regions. Mr. Speaker, I've realigned the Ministry of Transport to oversee four modes of transportation: aviation, maritime, inland water transport, road transport, and railways. The government will commission a feasibility study to develop coastal water transport services. This initiative aims to promote alternative modes of transport and ensure their integration into our existing systems under the National Transport Policy. It also aims to enhance tourism, reduce road traffic, and mitigate environmental pollution. Motorcycles and tricycles, commonly known as Okada, hold significant potential as a more convenient, timely, safe, and cost-effective mode of transport. Currently, the Road Traffic Regulation of 2012, LI-2180, prohibits licensing motorcycles and tricycles for fare-paying passengers. As part of our government policy, the Ministry will amend the regulatory framework to regularize the use of motorcycles and tricycles for commercial passenger transport. In our ongoing effort to revitalize the whole airport, the government will facilitate the establishment of the state-of-the-art pilot training academy and a maintenance, repair, and overhaul facility. The Volta region will become a center of excellence for aviation training and aircraft maintenance. This project will create significant employment opportunities. It will stimulate economic growth and bolster tourism in Ho and the surrounding communities. I have directed the airport company to release 10 acres of land at the Ho airport for this purpose. Mr. Speaker, with the completion of the Tema and Pakadang rail line, the government will launch passenger services between Tema and Adomi. We'll also begin developing the necessary infrastructure on the Volta Lake to facilitate freight transport between Tema Port and Bupe as part of our Eastern Corridor multimodal transport system. The Western Railway line will continue to be modernized in partnership with the private sector. This initiative aims to support the efficient transport of bulk cargo and minerals from the mines in Nsuta, Awaso, and Yinehin to the Takrade port, while providing passenger transport along the Western Corridor. Mr. Speaker, the last attempt by the previous administration to re-establish a national airline has failed. We will reopen a transparent process that will receive expressions of interest to invite competent established partners to work with us to establish a national airline. We believe that an efficient national carrier can help reduce fares on routes where external carriers are currently enjoying a monopoly. Mr. Speaker, our communications and digital technology initiatives focus on expanding our national digital infrastructure to stimulate innovation and enhance public service delivery. We're also dedicated to improving access to information and communication technology, promoting the digital economy, ensuring inclusive and equitable growth across all sectors. Nevertheless, the sector faces several significant challenges that hinder our progress, and these include insufficient infrastructure for delivering weather and climate services across all time zones, fragmented and uncoordinated databases, outdated legislation and policies that do not keep pace with a rapidly evolving sector, a lack of adequate technology to effectively detect, prevent, and respond to cybersecurity threats, and a daunting debt burden of almost 2 billion CDs. To revitalize this sector, government is committed to reviewing existing laws and policies to better align them with emerging technologies such as artificial intelligence, big data, Internet of Things, and machine learning. Additionally, we'll develop and expedite the enactment of the Kofi Annan Center of Excellence Bill. This legislation will establish the necessary framework for the center to concentrate on research and development, consultancy services, and capacity building. Mr. Speaker, access to safe and reliable water and affordable housing significantly enhances the well-being and quality of life of our people. These elements are integral to our reset agenda and fundamental to our vision to build the Ghana that we all want. However, the water sector in Ghana faces considerable challenges, including illegal mining activities that contaminate fresh water sources, rendering them unsafe for drinking and agriculture. This alarming situation highlights the critical need for a decisive and ongoing effort to combat illegal mining to save our environment and our public health. Government will prioritize completing new and ongoing water projects to improve access to safe drinking water. This commitment should be good news for the people in the Keta, Adaklu, Wenchi, Sekendi Takrade, Asankragwa, Sehiriyoso, Doduaso, Kweman, Damfa, Goso, Juabeng, Aveime, and Edubamso. We'll also tackle critical water projects in Damango, Tamale, Yendi, Sunyani, Techiman, and Takwa to ensure broader access to potable water nationwide. Mr. Speaker, Ghana has a coastline that stretches approximately 550 kilometers. Two-thirds of this coastline is threatened by tidal wave erosion, which impacts nearly 30% of Ghana's population. Rising sea levels have exacerbated vulnerabilities in coastal areas, leading to flooding, habitat loss, and community displacement. Consequently, coastal protection has emerged as a critical national priority. And so for the communities that are threatened by flood currently, we're going to prioritize building sea defense to be able to protect you. Flooding has become an all too frequent occurrence in many urban centers across the county, resulting in tragic loss of life, livelihood, and property. This scenario underscores the urgent need for sustainable solutions to address these pressing challenges. Many of our drainage systems are inadequate. They are worsened by careless waterway construction and obstruction, and the relentless encroachment on wetlands and floodplains. To tackle these issues, we have to explore alternative sources of funding to support essential drainage works, desilting, flood control, and coastal protection. Mr. Speaker, the quality of life of any nation relies significantly on a well-regulated and efficient housing market that guarantees access to decent homes. Our housing deficit is estimated at over 1.2 million units, and this has been the situation for many decades. High costs associated with land acquisition, construction material, and access to financing have made home ownership unattainable for many, primarily affecting vulnerable populations and contributing to the rise of slums. This government is steadfast in its commitment to complete all ongoing housing initiatives, beginning with the Saglemi Affordable Housing Project. We'll also implement a low-cost social housing project supported by a district housing scheme. This project aims to remove the financial barriers to home ownership. Workers in the formal sector, public or private, who have about 15 to 20 years before retirement, can purchase and own a house in cities and have the cost deducted monthly from their salaries until the house is fully paid up. Mr. Speaker, illegal mining, commonly known as galamsey, has inflicted tremendous harm on our forests, leading to significant land degradation and pollution of vital water sources. This reckless activity threatens Ghana's environment and public health. Mr. Speaker, I'm sad to report that presently 44 of the country's 288 forest reserves have been impacted, an area that is alarmingly equivalent to approximately 8,000 football fields has been completely destroyed. Mr. Speaker, the pollution levels in major rivers within the southwestern basin are critically high, with turbidity levels far exceeding possible units. To combat this urgent crisis, we're implementing a proactive approach that includes robust and impartial law enforcement, meaningful stakeholder engagement, and the creation of alternative livelihoods for our citizens involved in galamsey. We're expanding the Minerals Commission regional offices to strengthen their regulatory oversight. We'll establish a framework that categorizes mining activities into small, medium, and large scale, each with its tailored regulations. Mr. Speaker, We will establish a gold board, and we're in the process of doing it. Legislation will come to this House shortly. This gold board will ensure effective governance of the gold industry. At the same time, we wish to take advantage of Ghana's salt production capacity to place it as a central export commodity under the African Continental Free Trade Area. We'll also seize opportunities presented by the global shift towards net zero emissions to craft policies related to critical minerals such as lithium. The anticipated development of the integrated aluminium and iron industry will significantly increase the value of Ghana's natural resources. In our commitment to restoring degraded forests, we will launch the Tree for Life Restoration Policy and the Blue Water Initiative, which will transform mined out areas into ecological recovery zones. This ambitious afforestation program aims to establish more than 50,000 hectares of new plantations and undertake 5,000 hectares of enrichment planting annually. We'll also implement public sensitization campaigns to foster sustainable forest management practices and uphold the Wildlife Resource Management Act. We're going to involve school children and the general public in tree planting and tree growing. Mr. Speaker, comprehensive reforms will be introduced to enhance transparency and efficiency while ensuring tenure of security in land administration. Climate change remains a pressing concern for Ghana and the global community. To meet our climate mitigation targets, Ghana has allocated 24 million metric tons of its carbon budget, totaling 64 million metric tons of carbon for authorization under Article 6 of the Paris Agreement. We've successfully authorized three projects which are poised to reduce 5.2 million tons of our carbon emissions. In line with our manifesto, we are committed to strengthening institutional and human capacity through necessary adaptation and mitigation measures to bolster resilience in critical sectors such as agriculture, forestry, energy, and water resources. We also pledge to align our national policies with international efforts to limit global warming to 1.5 degrees centigrade by 2050 and promote a fair and just transition to renewable energy sources. Mr. Speaker, we stand on the cusp of making history, the history of a country that prioritizes transparency and accountability as key elements of governance. During my campaign for president, I pledged, as captured by the NDC's 2024 manifesto, to take a strong stance against corruption. Mr. Speaker, we must end state capture. Mr. Speaker, we must end the purchase of state and public assets, such as land and other immovable assets, by members of the political class. Mr. Speaker, I pledge to fight corruption head on by implementing Operation Recover All the Loot, ORA. In that regard, Mr. Speaker, one of the first committees I established, even before my investiture as president, was to establish the ORA committee on the sidelines of our transition. It is instructive to announce that the committee received over 2,000 complaints from the public and has since handed over a comprehensive report. This report has been given to the Attorney General for further review, thorough investigation, and eventual prosecutions. Mr. Speaker, the recent arrest related to the unwarranted payment of $2 million of Ghanaian taxpayers' money in the Sky Train saga, and then also the National Service ghost name scandal, mark only the beginning of a comprehensive response based on the oral committee's findings. Mr. Speaker, let me state that my commitment to fighting corruption will continue with the establishment of a unit at the presidency and the maintenance of the hotline, where complaints and reports regarding graft and corruption will continue to be received and transferred to the Office of the Attorney General. Mr. Speaker, We will shortly submit for consideration a bill to regulate and restrict the sale of disposal of public lands and state assets. Mr. Speaker, as soon as the 2025 budget is approved, government will immediately take steps to reform the existing anti-corruption agencies by increasing funding and improving transparency and accountability. Mr. Speaker, Ghanaians voted largely and overwhelmingly and endorsed the NDC because we demonstrated a strong commitment and abhorrence for corruption. We pledged to fight corruption and implement far-reaching reforms that will eventually achieve a sustainable zero-tolerance policy against corruption. Mr. Speaker, the justice and legal sectors play pivotal roles in ensuring accountability and fostering the fair, equitable treatment of all our citizens by the state and its agencies. Delays and uncertainties have plagued justice delivery in Ghana, leading many Ghanaians to perceive a politicization of the judicial process. The public trust in the judiciary's independence is alarmingly low. We must work together to restore confidence in the judiciary. My government will uphold the judiciary's independence and work with the Judicial Council and services to depoliticize justice delivery and collaborate closely with the Chief Justice to combat corruption effectively. Mr. Speaker, in line with our manifesto promise to reform and expand legal education, we have developed a legal education reform bill ready to be presented to Cabinet for approval and laying before this August House Parliament. Mr. Speaker, on January 30, 2025, I inaugurated the Constitution Review Committee to undertake a comprehensive review of our fundamental law and ensure that it reflects the hopes and aspirations of our citizens. The committee is composed of distinguished scholars, jurists, and professionals who have made significant contributions to our nation in both the public and private sectors. They will engage Ghanaians and consult with the relevant stakeholders and experts over the next 6 months. Their findings will ultimately be presented to the public for approval, followed by submission to Parliament for enactment into law, and referendums will be held where necessary. Mr. Speaker, I'm pleased to report that Ghana's internal security remains stable, despite developments primarily rooted in chieftaincy disputes. We firmly believe that even amidst conflict, it is essential for our citizens to coexist peacefully and seek amicable resolution to these disputes. We'll initiate comprehensive reform across all security agencies to strengthen our national safety and security. One area that has garnered significant public scrutiny is the recruitment process within our security forces. Accusations of politicization, favoritism, protocol, and selectivity have been prevalent. Let me assure you that we are committed to changing that narrative and fostering a more transparent and equitable recruitment policy so that all our young people who wish to serve in these services have an opportunity to do so. We are dedicated to enhancing the capabilities of the Ghana Police Service, the Prison Service, the Ghana National Fire Service, the Immigration Service, and the Narcotics Control Commission, the Customs Division of the Ghana Revenue Authority, and all investigative bodies operating under the Ministry of Interior. By motivating and re-equipping these agencies, we aim to effectively maintain internal peace and security. Mr. Speaker, I want to reaffirm this government's unwavering commitment to prioritizing the welfare and well-being of our brave men and women in uniform who sacrifice daily to uphold law and order and secure our nation's peace. We'll invest in adequate equipment and suitable accommodation for our security personnel. As Commander-in-Chief of the Armed Forces, I want to emphasize our determination to strengthen our democracies. This is particularly true given the troubled proliferation of military-grade weapons that have fallen into unauthorized hands. These weapons pose a significant threat to our national security and our constitutional democracy. They endanger the safety of all Ghanaians and potentially exacerbate existing conflicts such as chieftaincy disputes and in many cases fall into the hands of armed robbers. Since taking office, we have pursued a responsible approach to account for these unregistered weapons while maintaining stability within the security apparatus. I'm pleased to report that we've made substantial progress and are committed to ensuring that those responsible for this situation are brought to book. In our efforts to safeguard our citizens, Mr. Speaker, to safeguard our territory, to maintain our democracy, we remain vigilant against the threat of violent extremism and terrorism. Therefore, we are resolute in enhancing our defense mechanisms through diplomacy, counterintelligence, information sharing, infrastructure development, and the acquisition of appropriate technology. Achieving a stable and secure nation necessitates the motivation of our uniformed personnel. Currently, the Ghana Armed Forces faces a housing shortfall of over 17,000 units. And we recognize that the inadequate state of barrack accommodation needs to be addressed promptly. In addition to housing, we'll prioritize improvements to rations and fuel supplies for our security forces. Quality healthcare is another critical aspect of motivating our armed forces. As we work to expand and improve facilities at the 37 Military Hospital, complemented by the recently restored oxygen plants, we remain committed to finishing the delayed Afari Kumasi Military Hospital, which is still a top priority for my government. The goal is to complete and operationalize this facility before the end of this year. Mr. Speaker, like many other state institutions under the previous administration, the Ministry of Defense is burdened with approximately 3.7 billion cedis in debt, a figure that continues to grow as new and undisclosed debts are uncovered. However, the demands of our Army, Navy, and Air Force continue to rise, necessitating the need for modern platforms for effective operations. Despite these financial challenges, I am confident that the Ghana Armed Forces possesses the human resources necessary to revitalize the defense industry's holding corporation, which can support the government's efforts in this regard. DHOC, which was begun under the late President John Evans Atta-Mills of blessed memory during my tenure as chair of the Armed Forces Council, is essential for fueling Ghana's industrialization drive, which is aligned with our 24-hour economy initiative. Although DHOC has expanded, it's yet to be fully optimized to deliver the returns needed for the Ghana Armed Forces and our nation. I've tasked the Minister for Defense with incorporating innovative and significant private sector participation into DHOC's operations to harness its considerable potential for economic growth. Mr. Speaker, Ghana's strong international reputation was reaffirmed by the historic participation of foreign leaders during the swearing-in of the President, myself, and Vice President Nana Jin Opokwajiman on January 7, 2025. Mr. Speaker, it reflects the confidence our country's stability and democratic progress has engendered in the international community. Ghana remains committed to its Pan-Africanist ideals, non-alignment, democracy, and global cooperation, and the rule of multilateralism, embracing a policy of friends to all and enemies to none. We'll continue to cultivate diplomatic ties based on mutual respect and shared values. Mr. Speaker, Ghana is open for business. Our policy on economic diplomacy focuses on export diversification, foreign investment, and job creation. A new blueprint and delivery unit at the Ministry of Foreign Affairs with clear performance indicators will be launched soon to ensure foreign engagements yield tangible benefits for our people. Because of emerging security threats, especially on our borders, Ghana is committed to security initiatives, particularly in the Sahel region. We'll maintain a continuous engagement with our Sahelian neighbors and continue to work with them to resolve the difficult situation that they are confronted with. I've appointed a special envoy to help sustain diplomatic relations with our Sahelian neighbors, aiming to achieve their reintegration, if possible, back into our regional bloc. Mr. Speaker, we'll expand passport application centers nationwide, to reduce processing times to 7 days. We wish that a passport will be delivered